Those are the essential bad moods that unless we grow beyond them by going through our samskaras, we carry with us. So the man comes home, it's like, total, like the weight on your shoulders, you know, it's like, sit down, boom. And then your woman comes in and it's like, you tell the first moment, you know, she wanting something from you, you know. And she walks into the room and she spent the day like, if she's like, you know, I'm exaggerating both cases, like, oh, my love. Oh, yes, hello, I'm not love. Hello, Dorothy, he doesn't love me. What should I do? Maybe he does love me. I don't know. When Bob does this to you, does it mean he doesn't love you? Oh, what? You know, it's like this constant conversation about relationships and whether they're working or not and all of this and doubting that they'll ever have them or if they're in them, if they're good or how they'll get better. And so you come in and she comes into the room, you know, like, with that thing. Is he going to love me this time? You know, really loving me? Am I lovable? All those questions. So she walks in like, are you loving me? You know, and you're already sitting there, you know, like, you know, the last thing you want to have to do is actually love someone or, you know, put out love to someone. Or really what it is you don't want someone needing it, you know. It would be a whole different story if she came in totally radiant, totally happy, just looked at you, smiled and beamed, even if you felt burdened, then suddenly you'd go like, ah. You know? So that's what you want from her, this incredible radiance, and that's what she wants from you. It'd be one thing if she were like, you know, does he love me, does he love me? And then you walk in and you look right into her eyes and you're totally present and you take her and you love her and so forth, and then she might still have her trip or she might go, whoa. You know? So, but we aren't full like that. Most men aren't absolutely present. Most women aren't absolutely radiant, and we have these samskaras that suck us in. So, her responsibility is being love, being radiant, not for your sake, because that's who she is, because radiance is at her core. It's just like, you shouldn't try to be present for her sake, that's what a wimp does. You should be present because presence is consciousness, and your whole life is about being more and more developed in consciousness, more and more free in consciousness. It just so happens that your free consciousness, your presence, your ability to be totally present, which is free consciousness, not distracted and so forth, is what she wants in you. And it just so happens that her radiance through the body, the love through the body, her happiness expressed through the body, which is this radiant love quality, is what you want in her. But she shouldn't do it for you. She shouldn't even try to do it. It's her natural state. She is entirely responsible for incarnating Shakti, for incarnating feminine force, for bringing love, not even bringing, for being love through the body. As the body, happily. Because if she's not doing that, she's unhappy. Period. Not for your sake, just because why not? I mean, why would you want to be less than radiantly happy? It's your choice. Why would you prefer to worry about your intimacy? The feminine is in life. And by nature, the feminine's attention is on what's going on in life. That's where she's feeling whatever it is she's feeling in life. Whereas the masculine's attention is kind of like looking at life, looking down at life. You know, like, well, there's this thing and this thing. There's my relationship over there. There's my business over here. There's my spiritual practice over here. It's kind of like you get this bird's eye view of it all. But the feminine is in life. And because the feminine is in life, you, the body, she is most open to love with her whole body, becomes the main vehicle of her transformation. And you, because you have a more masculine nature and you're more directly connected to that, like bird's eye view, her relationship to you is only one of the many things you have going on in your life. You have your job, you have your kids, you have your, you know, love relationship with your wife, you have your sports you're involved in, your meditation, whatever it is. You have all these things, and some are more important, some are less important, but they're all just things that you could witness, that you're taking care of. For her, the desire for love is at the core of her life. And if she's not feeling love, then all those other things, her work, her, you know, sports or art or whatever she's involved in, they're not cutting it for her unless there's love flowing in her life. Now, because she exists in the realm of the feminine, Prakriti, she's attending to Prakriti. She's attending to something real, loving her or not. You are the main source of that because it's with you she most opens her body and mind and heart to be and give love. So, it just turns out that way because the feminine is involved in prakriti, because she's so in life, rather than like up in the mind or above, that your body, you personally, as a bodily creature, are the main thing that is the conduit of love in her life. And therefore, you have the main kind of feeling into her heart, you know? It's going to be a lot harder for transcendental God to go, I am now entering your body. It'll happen occasionally, but it'll be real easy for you to go, I am now entering your body. She's getting very happy with this conversation. So, she wants to be fucked by God, basically. Is that okay to say?
Yeah.
But if God isn't doing it, she'll take you. And if you are practicing well, you will be God fucking her. Not your body, not you personally being like God, you know, that person God, but that the universe, the universal consciousness, the full presence of God will come through you bodily into her through your love. And when you can make love that way, not only sexually, but all the time, love her with such intensity, not for her sake, but because that's how strong your presence is. That's how you affect everybody that way. When you can love her that way, she can open to God through you. Then, of course, she'll throw pebbles at you perhaps and walk away. But it's through you that she could really have a direct access to the divine because of the way she's built. Not because she's like weaker or something than men at all, but because she's so connected to the flow of elements in the universe that it's through the flow of elements, through the body, through life, that she will most access the divine. Whereas for men, it's the exact opposite. You would prefer a vision at a subtle level to come and convince you of the divine than someone walking up on the street, you know, and saying, hi, I'm the divine, something. You wouldn't believe it unless it was some hugely like, you know, like you can barely, oh God, you know, just like out of reach. It's, and then it connects with you and everything fucking dissolves, and that's what you call God. When you're not distracted by stuff, that's what the masculine calls God, right? Yeah. But the feminine's the exact opposite. It's prakriti. The feminine is like, when stuff is all love, that's God. When stuff is all love, when bodies are love, when walls are love, when people are love, when this place is love, that feels like God. They dance in it, they breathe it, they sing. It's like God, it's God, it's God. It's all God, you know, it's God in the body. It's God, oh God, oh God, you know, it's like, it's all about God. It feels so damn good and happy in the body. But then the masculine's over here and it's like, God, okay. You know, it's like, hello, you know, and they're both equally valid. Obviously, that which is beyond the world is God, and obviously it better be that this domain of activity is also God. They're aspects, different aspects of it. So we incarnate into the two aspects. Some of us have penises, some of us have vaginas, and represent the orientation to the earth. You know, the penis points upward, the vagina points downward. She wants to be filled by life, you want to be emptied. It's all part of the same thing. So, in a way, you are more influential in her progression towards final surrender than she is influential in yours. In a way. Because she is so sensitive to the realm of to prakriti, to you as a person, that you can actually transmit that divinity to her directly through the body. Whereas for you, you're going to be most at home with it, more ready to receive it in this transcendental way. And what she does to you might prepare you to do that. It might open you enough to do that. But when you finally do it, you probably won't even notice she's there, let alone your own body. So there is that different texture. And it's not, again, it's not because, you know, she's like weak and needy of you or so forth. But truly, it's true enough to be said that because of the way the feminine is, her reception of the divine comes through primarily through life. And when she receives it, it's in the body and in the heart, and it's all God. But when you receive it, it comes from the absolute, direct, and the less you can perceive of anything, the better. There's this feminine thing, I mean, I know you all know about it, but somebody in the intensive told me this incredible story. I mean, it's this classic story. He's having sex with his wife. We had learned a lot of techniques. And he was about to approach ejaculation, and he knows that to him what he said was that choosing ejaculation or choosing non-ejaculation to him is like choosing non-consciousness or choosing consciousness. And he knows he has that choice. And he knows that he's weak in choosing it. You know, he chooses the wrong thing. So he's having sex with his wife, and they've been practicing for a while, and he says to her out loud, he goes, "I have to stop because I'm going to come." And she said to him, "No, keep going. I want you to fill me with your seeds." And she fucks him really hard, and he has an ejaculation and fills her with his seed. And then he stops. You know, they fuck and they stop and he slows down. And he looked at his wife, and his wife said, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "You wanted me to." And she said, "No, I wanted you to be strong enough to resist." And then, to make things worse, she said, "Didn't David tell you never to listen to what a woman says?" It's like the world. The world gives you these situations that seem fucked up, but they're opportunities to practice. It's like the world wants to enlighten you, and it gives you tough situations so you could grow. It gives you unique situations that are for your evolution. Well, women are just microcosms of the world. They're feminine and Prakriti. She'll be pressing your button. She knows what hurts you. She knows what weakens you. And she'll do that over and over and over until she can get the pleasure of you being stronger than that. And it's like testing Shiva. How Shiva are you? Can I press on this and clap you? Yes. Can I press on this and clap you? Yes. What she's waiting for is to press on it and you to stay full in love. And to press on that one and you to stay full in love. And for her to go, "Fuck me, fuck me. Fill me with your seeds," and for you to say, "I will fill you with my love," and just keep bursting her open, but never, never lose it, you know? And something shifts at that point, even sexually. There's the emotional sexual aspect. But when it comes to a point that nothing she could do can make you ejaculate, it doesn't seem like a lot now, but when it actually comes to the point where she cannot make you ejaculate, everything shifts sexually. Everything shifts. Instead of you being the one who ejaculates and it's over and she knows she can make you ejaculate anytime she wants, and even when you're practicing, she knows if she keeps you in and moves, she can make you ejaculate. So she's the one, she's in charge, you're weak, you know, da 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 da. When you come to a point where you can make love through your whole body and your penis indefinitely, it's not her choice, it's yours, everything shifts. She just kind of relaxes and trusts you because she knows that you're completely full and that she cannot weaken you, that you're not that weak, so she could trust you. And the same thing is true emotionally. When she's pressing your buttons, you know, all through the day, whatever, weakening you, she's not doing it to, like, weaken you. It seems that way. She's weakening you in order to feel your strength. She wants to feel her fail at weakening you. She, just like this case with this woman, "Fill me with your seeds! Why did you do that?" She wanted him not to do that, so she taunts him into doing that. It's the classical thing, you know, like that you get into a fight and your woman goes in your room and shuts the door and says, "Stay out of here." But what she really means is, "Come in." You know, always, or virtually. So it's the same thing. "Stay out of here" means, "Are you strong enough to come in here even though I'm in an emotional state, or are you weak?" "Fuck me, fill me with your seeds" means, "Are you weak enough to lose yourself because she's pulling it out of you, or are you strong?" You know, pressing your buttons, criticizing you, insulting you, telling you to do, you're doing things wrong. Are you strong enough just to smile and see through her game and love her? Or do you kind of have to go, "Well, I'll do what I want to do. It's my thing," and withdraw out of weakness? It's a constant test. The universe is testing us. Are we willing to be in love? Are we willing to be in pure consciousness without any withdrawal, without any fear? Or does the big woman shrink us in fear? Are we afraid to go out and make money how we want to? Are we afraid to bring love into the world in form of our service as we want to? Are we afraid to bring prana to people and heal them? Are we afraid to do it to our wife, heal her, bring prana to her, regardless of what she says and does? Can we serve her? And can we stay whole in that, or do we ejaculate? Do we work to the point of exhaustion? Do we fuck to the point of exhaustion? Or can we maintain fullness and consciousness and prana. And she'll constantly test that. You know, if you've ever been married, that your woman will stop at nothing to weaken you, exhaust you, criticize you, belittle you, negate you, you know. And it's not because she's evil. It's because she's the goddess. And the goddess serves the purpose of awakening Shiva. And Shiva can only be awakened under circumstances of challenge, and nothing is more challenging than a woman. Your little woman or the big woman. I mean, that's why we've incarnated here, for this challenge to grow, to convert it into enlightenment. And part of the challenge is in the form of this woman in front of you, who, as you know, at first it's all lollipops, but then, you know, she's pushing this and pushing that, and sexually she's wanting this and complaining about that, and can you be full in it? And so everything changes when she can no longer pull an ejaculation out of you, and everything changes when she could be as emotionally wild as she wants, and you stand completely full in that, and she can criticize you and belittle you, and you just look at her and smile and love. What can she do then except love? I mean, there's no, she stops taunting you when there's nothing to be taunted. When she knows she can't weaken you, she stops trying to weaken you. That's all she's wanted anyway. She wants Shiva. She wants Shiva. And if you're not Shiva, she'll keep taunting the parts that aren't until you awaken those into Shiva. It's just like you want her. I mean, how many of you in the exercise yesterday wrote about the spiritual quality you wanted in your woman as being like devotion, surrender, openness? I mean, those are the big things, right? So, who is she opening, surrendering, and being devoted to? Are you giving her the circumstance to do that? That's what she wants too. You want her to be in devotion and openness and surrender and God love and all of that. Why should she if she knows she could poke you and you'll collapse or walk out? She can't. She has to keep her own masculine strong then because you're not strong enough. It's only when she can't make you ejaculate, she can't make you weaken, she can't make you turn away, she can't make you withdraw, that she could surrender as the goddess, because Shiva is ever present. The goddess and the god go together, Shiva and Parvati, or Shiva and Shakti. They're one, Purusha and Prakriti, they're one. She can't relax in radiant Prakriti, she can't relax as Shakti, as Radha, as whoever you want to talk about, unless there's a Krishna, unless there's a Shiva, they go together. So it's only by... You don't deserve devotion and surrender in a woman until you're offering all-pervading love in a consistent way. Until she can't weaken you, you don't deserve that opening, if you want to put it in those terms, because you haven't given the complimentary pull for her to surrender amidst. So this thing about ejaculation is the same thing about just overall emotional integrity and strength. If she could weaken you, if she could make you ejaculate in anger, you know, nyeh, 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 you know, like, when are you going to pay the rent? When are you doing this? You and your friends do this. You know, when are you going to get a life? Why don't you do this? You don't love me. You know, like, and if any of those things cause you to be less than absolute open consciousness, she wins. And she goes around untrusting Shiva because she can beat Shiva. And why would she surrender to a Shiva that she could beat any time, suck him dry? One way or another. It's when she can't suck you dry anymore. It's when she could test you to the limit, sexually as well as emotionally, and you just stay erect, sexually and emotionally, full of energy, undepleted, that she has no choice. She's been longing to surrender. She's been longing to open and relax. Finally, she can do that because your consciousness is not diminished in threat. She can't threaten you and diminish your consciousness. And that's what every woman and every man want, that situation of this incredibly open, loving, devotional, surrendered, radiant woman and the Shiva-like, consistent, all-pervadingly stable and love man. But you can't have... They go together, you know? They go together. And this whole thing about ejaculation is a weird thing because it's in some physiological way, it's kind of at the core. As long as she could weaken you, suck you dry... She wins. She can't trust you. It's a weird thing. You don't think about it that way, but try it. If you ever get to the point, I mean, I remember several times in my life with different women and so forth, where it came to the point where they realized they couldn't make me ejaculate. And I don't want to reduce spiritual practice to ejaculation and sexuality, because they're really, it doesn't have to have anything to do with it. But it's an amazing emotional shift that occurs when they cannot make you ejaculate, when you can love them beyond their, you know, they go wild. They, you know, everyone knows here that a woman could suck an ejaculation out of you, not necessarily with her mouth, with her vagina. You know, there's a way that she could move and do things like, stop, too late. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, they could just do it. There's a thing that they do. I don't know. I'm not it. You know, it looks like that. So it's a, well, there's something that happens when she's doing that thing and you're staying loving, absolutely full of prana, and she's doing it more and doing more, and she can start going, wah, wah, and she's going wild, and like she's just totally there, and you're just full and strong and absolutely full of energy, and then she's exhausted, or she's depleted, or she's full of energy, and you're there full and strong, and you walk away, and you've got a big erection, and she's like laying there, you know, then it's like, something shifts, I don't know how to describe it, something really big shifts, and even at the emotional level, it's the same thing. When she could go wild and hit on you and withdraw and fight you, and instead of you fighting back or ejaculating in anger, you know, like just, yeah, fuck you, or ejaculating and just walking away, like using your erection or something, like, I don't want to deal with this. Yeah, that's the classic limp dick of the man emotionally. It's like, fuck this, I don't want to deal with this. I mean, how many men have felt that 20 times a day? I mean, it's just like, you know, Jesus. You know that feeling? That's like the limp dick. It's like, you don't want to deal with that. It's a hassle to deal with it. It is a hassle to deal with it. It's also service. If you could deal with it in a way that enlightens her and you, you've transcended it. You're a stronger dick. You could fuck the universe better. If you can't make your woman happy, there's no way in hell you could serve the world. I mean, she's just one person right next to you. So you're deluded if you think you could walk away from your woman because you don't want to deal with it, but then you're going to go and deal with the enlightenment of the world. I mean, the world's a lot bigger than your little lady. So the measure of it is, can you stand full in love and consciousness in the midst of whatever barrage or weirdness your wife or girlfriend does and serve her and serve yourself without walking away because you don't want to deal with it, which is all men have a tendency, and without ejaculating in some kind of emotional trauma, but just love her through it. Sexually and emotionally, they're the same practice. To persist as all-pervading love, regardless of the threat or the challenge. And then the world and the universe, the woman shifts. The world changes when it can no longer threaten you as much. And your woman changes when she can no longer threaten you. They're the exact same thing. You know, it's like you could do more in the world. One man can affect the earth, the big woman, when he's no longer threatened by the earth. Someone whose bliss is not, whether he succeeds or fails, his bliss isn't affected. That kind of person can affect the earth. He's a big erection, you know, big, full master of the world. Same thing with a woman. You know, if success or failure, you're still full with her. She shifts. The world shifts. It becomes something that's devotional, something open, something that's workable, enlightenable. Our society has de-sacralized, made unsacred, the masculine. So that instead of men being loving martial artists who never hurt each other but have the capacity to kill instantly and face death directly, instead of that, we have absolute yahoos running around with guns, like spurting their masculine essence, you know, all over. You're blocking me. You know, like, you're in front of me at the red light. It's sick. That same impulse of wanting to be free is what brings people to pure freedom, divine freedom. But it has to be made sacred. It has to be recognized that it's part of our divine nature, the desire to be free, the desire to be that awakened beyond life. All of us are going to die. And unless we can face death directly, our life is stupid. We become, if in any moment you realize you're going to die, like if I told you, well, in order to aid this workshop, I have sprayed a virus from the ceiling in this room, and all of you have a year now, and live it as fully as you can. Well, some people are in that situation. You know, all of us are in that situation sooner or later, whether we know it or not. And that knowledge of death is like a slap in the face that wakes you up to living truth. That's the masculine. The masculine is the slap in the face of reality that says, whoa, what is life about? It's not about it's not simply about, you know, like reproduction and eating and feeling good and planting plants and wonderful gardens and listening to music. That's all great. It's all healing. It's all wonderful. But that's not what it's about, because one day you're going to die. And in that moment, all of that, your children, your music, your food, will just dissolve, disappear. And unless you have faced death, that transition into death will be horrible to you. You'll be clinging on to the things of life so strong. So that slap in the face of waking up, let's wake up, let's live life about what it is, a temporary stage of learning, a temporary lesson of realness. No superficiality, not, you know, how, it's like, you can only eat so many beautiful meals and listen to so much good music before you become toxified by it if you have a strong masculine. You realize that there's nothing wrong with that. It's a beautiful thing to live life in a beautiful way. These flowers are beautiful. But these flowers are not in and of themselves truth. They're an aspect of truth. But they're not in and of themselves the purpose of your life, your heart gift. And unless you can give your heart gift before you die, you'll die unhappy. Unless you can give your heart gift in this moment, you're unhappy. And the capacity to give your heart gift depends on the capacity to face death and to live every moment in its fullness, because you can feel death. Not just the morbid nihilism of death, but I mean living death as your ally. Death as part of life. That is the emptiness that surrounds all of this. The consciousness, as I was saying earlier, that pervades all of this. That's the gift of the masculine. And if you don't give that to a woman as an intimate partner, they begin to feel like your masculine is lacking. And what happens, because we don't have a sacred culture and we don't understand these things, is that they begin to complain about other masculine issues that are far less than what we were talking about. It's like, if you're not giving her the awakened consciousness of death, that is, let's live fully, let's not goof around, then they might say, they'll feel that lack, they'll feel it even sexually, but they'll feel it in their heart, they'll feel it all the time, and they might say, like, get a job. You know, they want to feel your presence, your real presence, which is only awakened when a man can face death, when he hasn't trivialized his life. That gift, the masculine gift, is the gift of freedom, is living life free. Ultimately, it's fearlessness, because death is the ultimate fear for all of us. And to feel death in every moment, and therefore to live life as a miracle, as a gift, and to give of ourselves completely, is the ultimate masculine way. Now, because men don't do that fully, because our culture doesn't support it, men do substitutes of that. And football, baseball, sports, financial killings, war and abuse and so forth, are actually substitute ways of feeling constrained, breaking through into freedom. They're substitutes. Now, all of them can be transformed once you've been seeped enough in divine freedom, once you've meditated enough, or your own, whatever your own practice is, so that you can feel death as in your heart, as consciousness. Then you can make all of these sacred. War becomes martial arts in the highest sense. Becomes men who have trained themselves so fully that they love everyone. Like Aikido, I don't know if you've practiced any of these arts, but you have to love your opponent so much to blend with them and move with them. You can't have resistance or fear. So love becomes infused in all of these in the full masculine. And it's a whole different story than a loving warrior. But what our culture has done, because these aren't sacred, is they go, war is bad, abuse is bad, violence is bad, aggression is bad, men are bad, masculine is bad. It's bad. It's aggressive, it's hierarchical, it's linear, it's pushing people down. Well, that's only because in some people, and most people actually, it's become dissociated from the truth of the masculine, what the masculine really is.